we had been discussing that after Lord Krishna told Arjuna that you can realize this goal of life by sticking to your path. The goal, although one, the paths differ according to constitution, and the success comes when one assiduously sticks to one's own path. The path of somebody else appears enchanting, very tempting, and thus one feels that let me walk on that path. The end result is that person cannot walk on any path because the somebody else's path was not for that person. And in trying to walk on somebody else's path, what happens is that person doesn't walk on the path that was congenial, constitutionally suitable for that person. So that becomes then a big tragedy in life, to walk on one's constitutionally congenial, convenient, suitable path. So if not, as one Swami used to tell us, that if a jackal tries to imitate a lion, now, jackal is not a lion. Jackal cannot imitate lion. Jackal, lion can jump on a mighty elephant and kill the elephant and eat it. A jackal, if tries to do that, the result will be very disastrous for the jackal. It is, they tell a funny story about it, that a jackal went to an elephant. It was telling everybody that I am the king. And then it told some other sundry small animals and told them, bow down. And they just bowed down. Why quarrel with these fellows? They bowed down. But when it told to a big elephant, hey, bow down, I am the king, then the elephant just took it in his trunk and then threw it far away. And the jackal got all bruised and, you know, it is giving, bleeding and all. It got up and said, oh, well, if you don't agree, you should have just plainly told that. Why did you do like this to me? So, when a jackal tries to imitate a lion or a big animal, it becomes like this. So, earlier if the jackal behaves like a jackal, it will grow into a good jackal at least. If it tries to imitate a lion, it becomes a morbid jackal, that's all. There is no possibility of becoming a lion, so the end result is becoming a morbid jackal. So therefore, it is very important to follow the constitutionally suitable path. And thus, after telling this, then Arjuna has a question in mind, that what prevents me then from going on this path? I have this ideal in my understanding, and I feel I should tread on that path, but in spite of me, it seems somebody else grabs me, takes hold of me, and drags me away from this path. What is that? The idea is, how can I conquer that enemy of mine? How can I overtake that situation? It is, I do not want to succumb to these temptations, but somebody somehow pulls me. I then have no control over it. And thus, even though I don't want, I happen to tread on the wrong path. And after all, where you reach is not what path you intended to walk upon, but what path you actually walk upon. You may be intending to take the flight to Chicago, but if you actually board the flight taking you to Florida, then you end up in Florida in spite of your best intentions. So, I have nothing against Florida, you see. It is just an example, you see. It is. So, whatever your intentions are, the actual means also have to correspond to that. If not, then you want to realize the goal, but actually walking on a path that leads against it, then how can you make it? So this is a very practical question. All of us have to, you know, answer this question in life, that what is this that is bothering me? Bhagavad Gita is a religion in all aspects of it. It is a wonderful philosophy, a very practical psychology too, and a wonderful manual for day-to-day implementation of those ideas in life. So, this question has been taken up by Lord Krishna in all its entirety and has given the answer. We briefly saw the answer. It is the 37th verse of the third chapter, that Sri Bhagavan Vacha Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajo Guna Samudbhavaha Mahashano Mahapapma Vidhenam Ihavairinam. This is desire. This is anger, born of constituent of prakriti called rajas, of inordinate appetite and most sinful. Know it to be an enemy here. A great answer to Arjuna's question. And see what it is to say. This enemy, there are no two enemies, but it is an enemy that comes in two forms to us. It is the desire and anger. They are not two things. Words and the verbal form used here is for the singular, not for the dual or plural. They are not two. The desire that appears as anger. And in his commentary, Shankara makes it clear. Many of us see anger as disastrous, bad in life. Anger has very bad results that we have to face in our own life because of anger. And it is sometimes we feel, no, this one should be, this anger is justified. It is only when I get angry, then I find out some cause for it and say, my anger is justified. Your anger is not justified. But it is only like that, mine and yours. It is the anger, when one looks into it, it harms the person who gets angry the most. The first destruction occurs there. Other distinct effects, they are secondary compared to the destruction it brings to the person that becomes angry. Like that one of our teachers explained it, that look, your face otherwise looks beautiful. Look in the mirror when you become angry, and you know, all distorted. So even your facial appearance gets destroyed by your anger. It becomes so bad with your anger. What to speak of the other inner things? You know, they certainly get a very bad effect. We know that our judgment is just spoiled by anger. Our rational judgment becomes the first casualty. The anger just destroys it. When we become angry, we cannot think properly. In the second chapter, this has been discussed by Lord Krishna, that krodhad bhavati sammoha, because of anger, one gets deluded as to what are the priorities of life, about the right and the wrong. Everything, the whole thinking process gets muddled up. Some computers, you know, when the temperature becomes too high, the functions become all distorted. You know, what you want to do, that doesn't occur. The keys, you press one key, something else happens there. The functions become all, they go haywire. So, anger heats the brain. And all our thinking faculty is just killed there. So, that is the effect of anger. And one realizes that I should not become angry. But still, one does not normally understand that the cause of the anger, not only cause, the other face of the anger is what we like, and that is desire. And we cherish the desires, we cultivate the desires, and feel that desires are good, but anger is bad. We don't understand that these are the two sides of the same coin. It is, if we are not going to, you know, sublimate the desires, there is no possibility of controlling anger either. Absolutely not, because those desires, if not fulfilled, then they become anger. Now somebody may ask, you know, that Charles will say, but what if those desires get fulfilled? Then I will not become angry. It is only when they don't get fulfilled, they get converted into anger. The problem is, these desires can never be fulfilled. They become more and more intense, go on increasing more and more. That is why these are called here, the desire is with inordinate appetite. In fact, never satiable. Try to satisfy a desire, it is impossible. Only one desire in life, which is really therefore not a desire at all. That desire alone can be satisfied, and that is to experience one's true nature, to realize the truth, or in other words, realize God. That is the one desire that can be fulfilled in life. Other desires are like pouring fuel to fire in order to put down the fire. Just as that is foolish, trying to satisfy the other desires, that let me become a great scientist, or let me become a wonderful orator, or the richest man in the world. All those desires, they will just go on increasing in intensity, bringing more and more dissatisfaction, never reaching fulfillment because of their very principle. Not that we are making any mistake in approaching them. Not that by some other means we can fulfill those desires. No, in their very nature, they are not going to be fulfilled. A person tries hard, but never understands those things, and thus keeps on trying and trying and goes on suffering for it. Like a dog trying to, you know, get the nutrition, food from a bone. Nothing is there in the bone, but keeps on biting. You see a dog, you know, the bone is liked by the dog a lot, keeps on biting at it, and feels that it is getting something out of it. What is it getting? It is just having its own saliva, you see. And thinks that it is getting something out of it. That is what happens when we get the desire for enjoyment from the outside world. This is what happens. After a while, a frustrating reaction comes. And then you get angry at that bone. And the dog puts it out from the mouth. For a while, gets angry with it. Thinks, knows that there is nothing in it. But again, picks it up. It is, human beings also are like that. They know sometimes that it is horrible. There is no happiness in these things. They get angry on those things. But again and again, they try to get happiness out of those things. And how many years after years, lives after life, one goes on doing that. Bhartrihari, out of lot of experience, has written a very nice book. He was the king, and he has written three very beautiful treatises. The last one is the treatise on renunciation or dispassion. 100 verses on dispassion, Vairagya Shatakam. And there it says, look, I did so many things to satisfy these desires, ran after so many objects, all life I kept on running. What happened? Well, I had a beautiful face. It all got wrinkled as the person becomes old. The face gets wrinkled. And now I hear that they have artificial way of, you know, putting something and getting those wrinkles off. But well, what? They will reappear after a little while. You postpone it, that's all. The face gets wrinkled. In pursuit of those desires, the face got wrinkled. Vali bhir mukham akrantam paliten ankitam shiraha. The hair was good black hair, and they became all grey. Then gatrani shithilayante, all the limbs which used to have strength, they have now become devoid of any power, any energy. They got all slack, and yet something still remained as green as ever, and his desire is that didn't become old. And desires do not go just because of old age. Some people feel that the desires will go away as one goes old. Let us never be under that kind of delusion. It is not possible, you know, to just you go on pursuing those desires and you feel that, well, now I am young. And in United States it is difficult, you know, for any person to feel old. And the society is built up on those funny ideas about the youth and the energies of youth and the enjoyments of youth. It is actually a very silly thing to do, but that is how people try to cover up the old age here, try to show the youthfulness with pride. There is nothing to be proud about it. That you, just as you wasted your years of young age, you are continuing to do that even after becoming matured. You have not learnt anything. That is what it shows, that's all. So, if one learns, it becomes a different life, you see. That, yes, it is not going to give me anything. It is not called experience if you keep on doing the same mistake all the time again and again. You may say that I have been living life for 80 years. Means what? You kept on doing the same thing for 80 years. Nothing, you haven't learnt anything. So, life should be taken up as an educative process. And there then the experience keeps on teaching us. We keep on learning. And then we understand that yes, I tried, you know, to get enjoyment from this object and that object. I tried different types of ice creams. I tried different types of physical contacts. I tried many other things. I had children and grandchildren and all that. Could I fulfill my desire? No. Could I get rid of my attachments? The answer is no. It goes on increasing unless one reverts the process, unless one puts a stop to it. Go on otherwise multiplying those things. That is why it is called unsatiable. You can never fulfill this desire. One may just say, well, my duty is to my child. Then, as if the child depends on you. Nothing in the world depends on us. In Karma Yoga, Swami Vivekananda makes it so clear that the world goes on very well without us. And nobody ever, not this minutest creature in the world ever depends on us. Without us also the world goes on wonderfully well. In fact, it is a great this thing of God, you know, that even in spite of our interference, it keeps it going. We don't do anything, just feel that, yeah, I am doing something for and making the world go on. It is like in the childhood, we used to feel, I mean, to travel in the train, and then I used to hold, as a 3-4 year old child, I still remember, I used to hold the bars of the window and try to push the train in the direction in which it is going, just to accelerate, you know. Now it doesn't make the train go any faster. It is, but I feel, okay, let me push it so that I will get early there. Sometimes a long train journey used to be very boring those days. So, push it on. Just as it doesn't do anything, similarly we feel that, I am making, you know, this world go on. I am working so that my son or my daughter or my so-and-so will become good. Oh, well, forget about it, you know. It is, God is there to take care of everything. It is, and God takes care of everything. It is a very silly idea that we keep on cherishing. And nothing, as Swamiji says, it is nothing but our big ego that makes us think that I am important, you know. It is, we know it when it is somehow or other it dawns upon us that you are not required in the world. It hits a person so hard that, well, I am not wanted in the world. It is, we keep on thinking that I am wanted for the world. No. It hits at us very hard. Then we make a world within that world that we call our home. Where there at least, in that world at least I will be needed. There at least my word will be respected. There at least I will be missed. Oh friends, and never think like that. And nobody in the world is ever going to miss any of us. That Thomas A. Kempis in that great book, Imitation of Christ, mentions that so tellingly that that the world is going to forget you sooner than you imagine. In fact, it is not going to remember you at all. It is that beautiful Marathi song says that, look, and the great ones like Rama and Krishna came and went. Has the world became just vacant because they are not there? and people still live the same way, and this Yogatmananda thinks that if I am not there, the Vedanta society will not function. And what a silly idea. It is, nothing really depends on any of us. It is to be understood. It is our ego that keeps us telling us, and so we keep on running after things, bolstering our desires, forgetting that no, the world like that never ends. Our duties never end. They go on, you know, increasing. First the duty is to my children, then that devolves upon duties to my grandchildren, you know, because they are grand after all, so I, grandchildren, so it becomes then duty to grandchildren, it is one keeps on increasing it, insatiable, it is an insatiable thing. The best thing is to just learn to get out of this terrible cycle. This cycle, you know that you will never be able to come to the end of the cycle. A silly person was, it was needed that this person should be kept busy. And so, because he was troubling others, so he was put on a circular path, you know, and told that, well, I will meet you where this road ends. Now the circular road never ends, you see. So we also, if we observe, you know, we are on a circular road like that, doing the same thing over and over, again and again. Do we not see the same signs that we saw some time back, the same houses? The same things on the road, coming again and again. We see them and still do not learn that we are going on that never-ending path. Get out of it! We have to learn to get out of it. And this is the important message, that these desires can never be satiated, can never be fulfilled. Second important thing in this about desires is that it is Mahapapma. These two words, Mahasano, Mahapapma. All the sinful things, all the non-idealistic things, everything that pulls us away from our ideal is done because of this. Every sin in the world is possible because of that. It is this desire will make us do anything. When the desire becomes intense, then for fulfilling that desire, one just forgets all the cherished values of life. The person forgets even the reputation, even the social reputation, the all other things. They are also forgotten because of intense desire. In Ramayana, a great epic of the Hindu culture, it mentions a very beautiful line there, that kamaturanam na bhayam na lajja. If a person has that inordinate desire, then even the fear of society, fear of police and other things, that also will not be enough to deter. We see why so much of crime. Not all crime is done just out of necessity. There was a very disturbing study for the social psychologists, that many of the crimes are being committed and not because of the just bare necessity of life, that, well, I don't get to eat, I must steal. That is at least understandable. It is certainly, it is a blot on society there, that it cannot provide even for the bare necessities of people. But lots of crimes are committed, and not because of that, but because of desires which cannot be, you know, fulfilled in a legitimate way, so a person goes to commit heinous crimes. Then there is still worse something, that many crimes are committed just for the thrill of crime. That becomes then an ingrained nature. You see that you don't get normal fun out of anything. So, debases oneself. You want excitement. Again, that is another, you know, disease of modern civilization, looking for excitement. And if normal jumping about doesn't excite you enough, then you take gun and shoot people to get more excitement. Some normal excitement, yes, okay, I will go to dance and have some fun and I will feel excited. After a while that does not provide excitement. So now you do something worse than that. You killed a few people, ha, what an excitement. So it is, no crime is such that you cannot do it. Kama turanam na bhayam na lajja, neither fear nor shame. The sense of shame, neither fear. For doing good things, what will people say if I am to do that? After all, I am a minister in this Vedanta society. If I do that good thing and people see what they will call. But if I have to do something bad, if that desire is very potently, you know, coming up in me, then all that will be just pushed aside. And we will do, when a person does that kind of crime. It doesn't stop at any, there is no threshold that it won't cross to commit these things. So we should be aware that all these, all the big criminals are in us. All these scoundrels are sitting in us in this form of this desire. If this desire is allowed to just have its way, it is possible a person can do any crime. It is mahapapma, therefore a terrible criminal. Lord Krishna is giving the answer in a very comprehensive way. One should meditate on this, that what is this, the desire. And then the next thing he says about desire is Viddhi enam iha vairinam. Know it to be your enemy. Why it is to be told? Whatever one normally is seeing, normally is understanding, need not be told, you know. Just as you don't have to be told, know this to be microphone. Well, it is simple, everybody knows that this is a microphone. You don't need a special instruction for that. Why it is told there, that know that the desire is your enemy. Shankara, in his beautiful commentary, illustrates this point, that people consider it to be friend. The trouble is, people consider it to be friend. We consider the desire as our friend. And because we feel that the desire brings lot of pleasure in our life. I had the desire to see the movie, and so I went to the movie, and so had lot of fun. So had I not had the desire, I would have missed the fun, is it not? What, Rana? There is a correct understanding that people get, that yeah, that because I have the desire, I get some enjoyment. Take out the desire, then I will be just sitting morose in my room. No desire, no going to movie, no fun coming out in life then. So Desire is considered foolishly as our friend, you know. And this is the logic given for that. And many people come forward with arguments for that. Our Arunim, very intelligent boy, he will come, you know, with argument that what do you mean if there is no desire, the life will be all listless life. What is to be done in that life then? It is like a stone, is it not? Stone doesn't have any desires. Because I have desire, I do so many things, I progress. Even, you know, people give that as desire, as the force that makes us progress in life. If there is no progress, desire, how can human beings would never have been able to build such a great society? See, we had the, therefore we conquer the nature, we go to the moon, we are ready to go to the Mars, and what not. It is all because of our desire. If there is no desire, where is the scope of any progress? Desire is seen, therefore, as friend, not as enemy. It is very difficult for a person to see the desire as enemy, and therefore Lord makes it very clear here. Know it to be your enemy. This knowledge has to come up that desire is our enemy. Do you get it, Arunim? What? Say, desire is... desire is your enemy. Desire is our enemy. The worst enemy in our life is this desire. Desire is our enemy. Desire is not our friend. Desire is the Trojan horse that we bring. You know the story that Trojan horse... that was brought by what is the other city? Troy. And then they all got defeated by that. So, because it looked like very funny, very nice. So, these desires about all these objects, we say, so nice, it will give me happiness. No desire ever adds even the least amount of happiness in our life. Let us face this truth. We try to fight against it. We have such a bad habit of fighting against truth, you see. Because the truth, we feel that will take away all our enjoyments. No, friends, truth will bring us the true enjoyment. The all enjoyment comes from the knowledge that I am perfect. I am divine. So that brings the bliss. No bliss ever, you know, you may eat ice cream and feel that the ice cream is bringing you happiness. You never feel happiness in the ice cream. It always comes from within. It is never that you feel happy, that you may hug somebody and say, I am getting happiness out of it. Well, it never comes from that. It always springs from here. Be observant, you know, as a person of scientific temperament, we should be observant. Did you get happiness from that person or it sprang from you? See the source. Go to the source. That person might have been a mirror for you. On last Sunday, Rana gave nice analogy about the mirror, you know, that might have seen that happiness is there in the mirror. What were you seeing in the mirror? It is very interesting, you see. When you look at the mirror, whether you see mirror or you see your reflection, you are seeing both, you see. But you never say, I am seeing the mirror. It is never understood that you are seeing the mirror. So, it is like that. So the objects that you feel that you are getting happiness from, the persons you feel that you are deriving pleasure from, no, it is your own reflection, and so that you are actually trying to get happiness there. But in mirror you cannot get it, you know, you can see it, but well, when you try to get it, your hand strikes glass, not the object that you are seeking, and thus it turns into frustration and anger. You try it once, and you didn't get it. You feel the knuckles getting hurt. Again you try with greater force. Boom! Again you get hit badly. That is what is becomes anger. You know, this reaction of this what you do out of desire. It gets rebound as this anger. So, after a while you get angry at the mirror. That is cheating me. Hit it more. Well, you get start bleeding, that's all. Earlier it was just minor hits. The mirror breaks and you get hurt. Nothing, nobody else loses anything. You lose everything. So, it is like that. So, know that to be your enemy. It is a great training in life to learn to look upon desires as our enemy. It is a very useful and most important training in one's spiritual progress to learn to look upon desires as our enemies. Do you agree with me, Triveni? No? Okay, yeah. Because she was looking with an incredulous face, that probably. And she has studied lot of scriptures, so I wanted to just confirm that, yeah. So good that she agrees that, yeah, it is, desires are our enemies. Vidhi enam iha vairinam. It is, Shankara comments that initially one considers the desire to be a friend, fondles it, keeps it close, makes it bigger, and only when the painful reaction of it comes, then it thinks that it is enemy. But a wise person should know that it is the enemy. It is therefore to be shunned. It is therefore this desire has to be with efforts. One should learn to transcend that. That is the great message. Now, how to do it? It is said that, look, whatever our actions are, one has to see how this can be done. It is easier said that conquer the desires. The doing is not that simple. Everywhere it is like that the practice takes a lot of patient, persevering efforts. An impatient person cannot do much in spiritual life. One has to be very patient, persevering, and keep on doing the practice for long, long time with tremendous reverence. Then only one can achieve some progress there. So, therefore, it is told here that in the next verse, the 38th, Dhumena vriyate vanhi yatha darsho malena cha yatholbe navrito garbhas tatha tene damavritam. As fire is enveloped by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, as a fetus is enveloped by amnion, and even so is this covered by it. This is covered by What is this? This means the knowledge, the divinity is covered by this desire, this enemy. This is covering our true nature. This is the impediment that we have in Holy Mother's life. One beautiful incident comes when a disciple asks her that, when shall I get liberation? She said, can you renounce the, give up the desires this moment? Then you are free here. Then you are free. Then in fact, you are freedom. You are free. Give up the desires and you are free. So that is the ideal. That give up the desires and you are free right there. If you don't, then you are bound. That is the meaning of bondage. If we keep cherishing the desires, then it is no freedom. Keep on asking this question, so I will take it up. I can see it written on many people's faces right now. And that question is, what about the desire to realize God? Is it not a desire? Should we give up that desire? This is, friends, play on words, nothing else. We like to play on words. This desire for God realization is really a desire to give up all desires. That is positively put as desire for God realization. So it is not really a desire. Like somebody said that I have developed detachment for detachment. Now what does it mean, It is just, I have developed detachment for detachment. So just as that is just a play of words. And this calling the God, it is because of lack of better words we say desire for God realization. It is really not a desire, as Sri Ramakrishna beautifully tells with analogies that although you are told not to eat sugars, some sugar, this thing given as medicine, that is fine, that is not to be counted among sugars. That sugar candy is not to be counted among sugar because that is given to you for a curative process. So that is, you don't have to worry about that, take that. It is for some indigestions, it is told that don't eat certain kinds of greens. But one green is given as medicine, that is, what is that in Bengali, Arunim? What is that? Hinche. Hinche shag. So, did you ever eat hinche shag? So, hinche shag, that hinche green, is not to be counted amongst green. Why? Because that doesn't have that bad effect. So, the desire for God realization is really the one aspiration which leads us to the goal. When it is told, renounce all desires, means all these apparent unfulfillable desires. Desire for God realization can be fulfilled. So it is, it doesn't have this problem with it. It is told by, in Chandogya Upanishad, therefore, that the name for this self is Satyakama, means the desire for that alone is fulfilled. For all other desires, how can you ever fulfill the desires about appearances? Keep on going, running after them, they are appearances. You will never be able to fulfill the desire for that. But if you have the desire for something that is, that can be fulfilled, you see. The self alone is. And so the desire for realization of self, that alone can be fulfilled. All other desires, bottomless pits. Never satiable, and will pollute the life by all types of sins and crimes that one can imagine. It is therefore one should assiduously, conscientiously cultivate this attitude to give up all the desires and cultivate the desire for God realization. We shall see this verse that we chanted just now, that how this covers the whole knowledge. Our knowledge is covered by nothing but this desire. We shall discuss that verse in our next class. Any questions? Yes, George?
This desire for God realization, we have to be awful careful. We don't try to impose that on other people.
Well,
that's what wars are caused by. I mean, people say, I have the right religion. If you don't believe it, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, that is not the religion, and that is not then the desire for God realization. That is the desire for overpowering others in the name of God realization. If one has the desire for God realization, it automatically removes the desire of being imposing over others.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't get God realization. They do therefore all sins. That proves this verse, you see. That all sins therefore come in the name of religion. Yes, nothing has been so cruel to humanity than this practice of this pseudo-religion. Yes, the devil starts quoting the scriptures. Nobody quotes scriptures better than devil, you know, best quotes. So, and can do everything there. Yeah.